Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, if ever there's a measure of the stickability of an article to strike home and stay with us, I think it's the ability we have to either pass it around and then have it get passed back to us in this internet day and age, of course, or we encounter it in a file that we've been carrying around and keeping us with us for a long time. And then in the old days, you could always tell the power of an article based on how fuzzy it got, based on how many times it got multiply Xerox copied and passed on further. Well, I encountered yesterday an article that I, of course, have been carrying with me, believe it or not, for 33 years. I can't imagine how many people and times I've Xerox copied it and handed it out, plus circled it and put it in front of my own nose, particularly as a leader of a variety of series of organizations over my life, than the one I wanted to make reference to today. And the article was called Hail to the Chief as Executive. It was written by Mr. Ronald Hoff, published in the New York Times in August 30th of 1981. So 33 years ago. That places me at that time 2 years out of college. So again, the impact it had on me to even start carrying it, but dragging it with me. And I thought this morning, you know, I wonder if this thing is still available out there on the internet. Typed in the name of the article and just New York Times, and sure enough, it popped up, and it's obviously been circulated time and time again electronically. So no better opportunity then for me to share it in a dialogue here this morning again, and hopefully get the word out more about the key messages that Mr. Hoff offered. At the time, he was director of SCB, and on the corporate board, it was a subsidiary of Foot Cone and Belding Incorporated, which is a very prominent advertising firm, and he took a strong stand regarding executive leadership, and in particular as it related to government leaders, and no better person at that time to spotlight than none other than President Ronald Reagan. I will readily admit, and for those who follow our show know that I'm pretty much a strong card-carrying Republican, maybe not too much on the conservative right, but certainly that's in my veins, the belief in free enterprise systems, no surprise, thus my pursuit of engineering and management study throughout my years in academic sense as well as business. But for me, then, the lessons learned that were constantly personified by President Reagan throughout the course of his career in office as well as afterwards, and just the joy and delight to this day people get in quoting the many quips that he put out there in a regular basis. I particularly think it's timely to revisit this article because it may not be the attributes that some of our leaders in our government agencies are demonstrating, nor, by the way, within our business operations. So I'm not meaning to be judgmental at public or private sector, but just a recognition that there's a lot of wisdom that can come back to us by circling back. And so that's what I'd like to do here. At this time, back in 1981, there was a lot of anxiety. In fact, it was almost called a growing contagion, that more and more corporate chiefs at that time were getting fired, often within the first year of their tenure in office. And the article was teeing up, so how does the executive survive during volatile times like these 33 years ago? I wouldn't say that's changed too much, although it's certainly become more obvious and evident, and I think the contagion has been on a more grandiose global scale in these 33 years of things changing. And Mr. Hoff went to the ultimate teacher, saying that he lives in the White House, and that was Ronald Reagan. He played out then 11 points that he said, if you had the chance to sit down with a teacher in the Oval Office, he would probably give you some final interesting guidelines for successful management. Interestingly enough, one of those he didn't put on the list was actually a plaque that Mr. Reagan had on the back of his credenza that was always in his executive photos. And it said something to the effect, there's no distance or opportunity that a man can go so long as he doesn't have to take the credit for it. Something, a message, by the way, that I wished I'd caught on to earlier in my life than I did, which hopefully has served me well, though, from a leadership standpoint and recognizing the power of being in service to others and also giving away your ideas, knowing full well it's going to come back to you. And those, again, who've watched and followed our show know that really is at the core of Circles of Change. The first premise that Mr. Hoff mentioned that he felt Ronald Reagan personified was, number one, for heaven's sakes, smile a little. And Lord knows that for those of you in leadership chairs, how often that is hard to do, and the circumstances draw you to be extremely somber, if not stressed out to the maximum. But any time that humor can play out was really, really important for those of us who lived through the experience of President Reagan being shot, that throughout his hospitalization, we certainly were impressed. He even impressed his detractors, because while he wheeled into surgery, he cracked, "I sure hope you guys are Republicans." And I remember that even being caught on an audiophone at the time. Number two, let your people know what you stand for, but really keep it simple. And that was the one thing that the president was completely known for, is distilling complicated messages in very simple terms, but also staying the course. For those of you that lead organizations, and certainly senior leaders, how often we can get tripped up in the rhetoric of the day. And if we can just get things to very simple terms as opposed to long manifestos or huge white papers or, heaven's sakes, death by PowerPoint presentations, that will stick with people. You know, Mr. Reagan's corporate position, as we would say, and what had changed little since 1964 when he first got in office, was let's reduce taxes, strengthen defense, and get the government out of your hair. And again, for us Republicans, that certainly is a credo that has continued to stick with me. Number one, again, for heaven's sake, smile a little bit. Number two, let your people know what you stand for, but keep it simple. Number three, don't discard your old-timers. Of course, Mr. Reagan was poking fun at himself at that point, since he was at age 70 installed in the White House, and quite frankly, many able executives even begin running companies in their 60s. But at that time, to keep in mind that Mr. Reagan started his political career at age 55. 3 weeks have gone by since I did a series, in fact, focused on the great talent war that's underway in our country just based on pure demographics. And if there's ever a point that I've stressed throughout those three podcasts that preceded this one, was the power of the wisdom that comes from those of us and those who have more senior stripes, both of the sins of omission and commission, I'll say, that has turned it into wisdom and both the tacit and explicit knowledge to get things done. For you leaders of organizations, do not discount and go the extra mile for understanding what you can capture for your employees and their willingness and desire to make a difference sooner rather than later, particularly in the perhaps the sunset years of their career choices with you, but that also ever thought about keeping them on in some kind of part-time capacity to carry forward the vision. Number four, when you get a new job, get a fast start. A popular book that's hit the airwaves since Mr. Reagan's time is called The First 90 Days, which, of course, stresses the absolute importance for touching out and really listening for those first 3 months in particular. But also in the case of Mr. Reagan, just to keep in mind what he meant by that, he ordered the replacement of almost 1,000 federal executives. He reduced government travel allowances by 15% and slashed the budget for outside consultants. And those were, at the time, not historic actions, but really thoroughly decisive and symbolic ones to let the organization, the enterprise, the country at that time know that he was off to get a fast start and he continued that track. Number five that Mr. Hoff writes about and reinforces that President Reagan lived by was never underestimate the power of a speech. In other words, one superb speech can cap a career and even save one, as much as it can get you in trouble. But the idea that when you've got the chance to grab the microphone as a leader, both literally and figuratively, that is your job and that is your opportunity. You know, that's one thing, of course, that Mr. Reagan was so noted for, was his television addresses. He produced a flood of public support. He got grassroots endeavor. In this day and age, of course, that never underestimate the power of a speech also includes the power of blogging and other media-related things, but there's still something about in your own voice that can be so powerful. When you give that speech, though, Number six was, remember, though, to use simple words that really can stir emotions. And, you know, too many executives sound like they were born in a computer and also get ridden by the $10 words and the verbiage of the buzzwords of business and like. And that just simply doesn't stick with people, whether that be, quote, ordinarily people or stockholders or even the scholars. That who cannot forget that during his final debate with Jimmy Carter that Mr. Reagan summed up something simply by asking, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Is it easier for you to go and buy things in the stores than it was 4 years ago? Those simple metaphors that stuck with us and actually drove the voting persuasion at the time. Number seven, never apologize for what you are. And that, I think, is a message to any of us, regardless of what role or opportunity you take on, that the backgrounds that we all bring indeed are who we are, and how to play that in a stronger way. Of course, one can recognize that President Reagan was always poked at with his roots being in Hollywood and coming up in theater and so on. But if you want to look at that ever really being any detractor from his campaign or his political journey, absolutely imperceptible, in fact, is what has been said over the years as the research has shown out. He doesn't have to apologize for what he is, that he knows where he was on a mission and the people he rallied. Number eight was never to hesitate to pick up the phone and sell somebody your program. For anyone in particular, let's talk about that in sales, that part of the process is indeed getting there, being there. And it isn't just about, in this day and age particular, mailing letters, emails, and texting. It is the ability to connect voice to voice and then going to that next level of face to face. And that picking up the phone is so powerful. Just think about it in the context of your own situation, your own organization, when you're stuck in some difficult problem, let's say, and what that one phone call can be from a wise advisor, whether that be your mentor or your boss or a colleague from somewhere else, that an uplifting 5 minute conversation can reshift your whole direction on what you're going through, but also build a strong alliance that you have with that particular leader. So for those of you that are leaders, my challenge to you is to look at a time map and realize how much time are you really spending saying thank you, reaching out, offering a hand of support to those who really count on your presence and being involved in things. And that, by the way, when a major program is underway, at the end of the day, the buck stops with you. So are you on the field with your team and your group supporting whatever it is you need to do, whether it be that campaign with an important client, being an advocate for an important supplier, or what you might have to take on in the legislative body is if there's unfair business practices that are affecting how you and your people respond. There are times when you cannot delegate that. And so having that drive to pick up the phone and sell somebody your program. But don't confuse them with a slew of adjectives. You know, it's the age-old business adage that more than two objectives is no objective. We have to keep it simple-minded and keep repeating it in that message. Number nine was pour on the praise. In other words, praise from the boss can always be the strongest motivating force in our civilized world. And as well, a congratulatory note or a call that takes just 30 seconds of our time as leaders, the employer receives it, will never forget it. And in fact, that verbal commendation oftentimes means a lot more, believe it or not, than the monetary one that might show up in their paycheck months later. You know, Mr. Reagan used praise almost instinctively. When he did a package of tax cuts that were passed to the Senate Finance Committee, by 19 to 1, he called the committee chairman at the time, that was Bob Dole, if I recall correctly, and he praised him for stirring that package. A tremendous job, he told the senator. And, you know, praise really solidifies loyalties. The article I'm quoting from, again, for those of you, if you're on the right with me here on the web, you can look it up. Just type in Hail to the Chief, comma, as executive, New York Times. It was first published in August 30th of 1981. The author was Ronald Hoff. We've been through a number of those messages. The first one was, again, for heaven's sake, smile a little. Number two, let you know what your people stand for, but keep it simple. Number three, don't discard your old timers. Number four, when you get a new job, get a fast start. By the way, I might comment, the fast start doesn't necessarily connote just action. It also means active listening, to be mindful that you're setting that right strategy and that path forward. Number five was never underestimate the power of a speech. And by the way, as leaders, that is your job, to be at the microphone, either literally or figuratively. No small wonder that I've found myself doing a radio show, in other words. Number six was use simple words that really stir emotions. Number seven, never apologize for what you are. And number eight was never hesitate to pick up the phone and sell somebody on your program. And number nine was pour on the praise. The next one relates specifically to a leadership practice that Ronald Reagan was famous for, and I would venture to say we've lost sight of this one in many companies and in way in which many of our government institutions behave and our government leaders. I'll go up so far as to say that as a statement. Number 10 was delegate responsibility to those you trust and then don't stew about their decisions. Let me repeat that one. Delegate responsibility to those you trust and don't stew about their decisions. Because the minute you do, or the minute you reverse them, then that element of trust is really going to get dissolved, and it does not send that signal correctly then within the whole organization about staying the course. One of the stories that comes out about Mr. Reagan was that he really practiced delegation to a degree that the White House at that time had never seen in years. He kept regular office hours, as opposed to around the clock. He took extended vacations. And, you know, some of you might be saying, well, that's just not possible in this day and age. Well, guess what, folks? If we talk about the power of reflection and the necessity to take breaks and replenish, which we talked about in a couple segments here today, that is a lost art, but also it's been socially pushed out as not even in some regard acceptable or viewed as work. But if you know the whole mindfulness movement that's underway in companies around the United States in particular and certain elements overseas, it dictates a core attribute for successful leaders is to have that time for reflection, that time for play, that time for rest. At any rate, the quick vignette that was quoted in this article about Mr. Reagan was that when the American planes were shot down, they shot down two Libyan jet fighters back then in 1981, the president's aides, who were confident in their roles and responsibilities, didn't even bother to notify him until the following morning. And what a signal that sent of empowerment, but also compliment of his leadership team, and also, quite frankly, the president being presidential. Number 11, then finally, in the article that was written here by Ron Hoff, was be more of what you are and not less. And quite honestly, that I've done many a show on this. In fact, my cute quip is from the children's book called Elmer, the Patchwork Elephant. The story about the elephant who indeed was patchwork, and his role was constantly to be the jokester and keeping the elephant herd of gray kind of on the mark, being creative and being different. And one day he felt that, gee, you know, he was kind of maybe tired of being singled out that way. So he went and rolled in grapes or something and turned himself gray, but then recognized in a very short amount of time the entire herd was becoming listless and they were missing the spark, the fun, the diversity that Elmer the Patchwork Elephant brought to the party. And to that point is actually the herd needed Elmer to be more of Elmer, just as our organizations, just as our families, just as our volunteer groups need each of us to be who we are. Now, not from an ego standpoint and not that meaning that we're the center of the universe, but what a world it would be if we knew to respect and appreciate more of what each of us bring uniquely and figure out how to mesh all these interesting interchangeable pieces. That's the power of a high-performing team. And as we've often talked about here on the show, too, for leaders, to find then our responsibility and opportunity is to best fit people so they can be more of who they are. This being more of what you are, not less, though, as Mr. Reagan was often quoted ahead and Mr. Hoff brings up, is there's nothing wrong with saying, for gosh sake, if that's what you feel like saying, don't think you have to come on like a silver-tongued orator. Come on like a human being. In other words, tell it to me straight. And one of the best campaign stories about Mr. Reagan goes like this. And at the end of his countless speeches, a woman about 80, I gather, spoke up from somewhere in the audience. She said, Mr. Reagan, everything you said sounds just fine, but what about the old folks? Haven't you forgotten us? Mr. Reagan looked down at her and smiled and said, forget you. Heavens, how could I forget you? I am one of you. And that humbleness of which he approached the office, the regal nature of how he as a leader upheld the hail to the chief as also as executive for the country, quite honestly, a call to action, I feel. A call to action not within those of you just in government and in public service and in elected offices, but each one of us that have aspired to lead organizations in any way, whether it be a management of a small team or a large organization that you might be the steward of. Those are tall orders and very important for us to take on. For a copy of this article, again, go to Hail to the Chief as Executive, New York Times. You can Google that and get a full representation of it. You could also send an email to me at change@thelarsengroup.com. I look forward to sharing it with you. I probably won't Xerox copy or scan in the rad taggy copy that I will continue to carry as my own. But at any rate, it's one of those things that precious articles we pick up, and interesting to even have seen what I underlined at age 23 versus now here in my 50s, a powerful message. Appreciate the opportunity to have shared that with you.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsengroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.